Okay, so good morning. My name is Gary Alley, and we'll be doing our Shabbat morning Bible study here at Narkees Street Congregation, and it's October 7th, 2016, and we're normally going through a triennial parasha that we started a couple years ago, but because today is the Shabbat of Sukkot, I've decided to do Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, to kind of read through there and find its some connections with Sukkot and to be connected with what's happening here in the land right now. So I'll open in prayer. Lord, thank you for this morning, and thank you that you've brought each one of us here, including people who may listen to this recording down the road, and that you would speak to each one of us and help us to hear from you. Thank you for your word that has been passed down to us through so many generations. And it's a privilege to be here.
Amen.
In the name of you pray. Amen.
Amen.
So, I guess to start off, we should probably get a little background on the practice of reading, the Jewish practice of reading from the scrolls. There's how many scrolls? How many Megillot?
Five.
It's five. So Megillah is scroll in Hebrew. And what are they? What are they?
Ecclesiastes. Ruth, come on, guys.
Esther.
Song of Songs. What's missing?
Ecclesiastes.
What did we miss?
Not Job.
Jonah, I mean. Do they call Jonah?
Job.
Lamentations. Very good.
Lamentations.
Okay, so. Each one of these has been paired up with a, according to rabbinic tradition, each one of these scrolls has been paired up with a certain holiday or feast, I guess. So today, this is us. Ecclesiastes is read during Sukkot. Ruth is read.
Shavuot.
Feast of Weeks. Esther.
Purim.
Song of Songs, Passover,
Pesach,
right? And Lamentations. This is
Tisha
B'Av. And that's just kind of like a general knowledge to begin with.
Well, thank you.
Sure. And let's talk about Sukkot. Let's just look at the calendar. How does the biblical calendar lay out of these five? What are the three most important, holidays according to the Bible?
Passover.
Shavuot.
You got the first of the year Passover and the first of the year Sukkot.
Yeah, but the main three are Pesach, Shavuot, or Tabernacles.
And these are known as like the three pilgrimage,
the Regalim
feast. Regalim, and so it says in, let's just look it up here, it's in Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 16:13. It says, you must or 16:16. Three times a year all your males must appear before the Lord your God in the place he chooses for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Festival of Weeks, or the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Booths, Shelters. And they must not appear before me empty-handed. It appears a few times, like in 2 Chronicles 8:13. Let's see, Exodus 23:14.
Does the place he chooses always mean Jerusalem?
Yeah. Or specifically the temple, which means Jerusalem.
It's interesting. We had the most heard the most brilliant teaching on not coming empty-handed, and what was it to bring a gift at gift to the festivals of the Lord. Really amazing one the other night.
Yep. So here it is, Exodus 23:14. What's it say?
Exodus what?
23:14.
3 times you shall keep a feast to me in the year.
Yeah, and specifically the feast there, you know, is Chag. So what are those? Chag HaMatzot. So, you know, matzah, feast of unleavened bread. Then you've got next, let me scroll down a little bit to the next verse, verse 16. It says Chag HaKatzir, feast of harvest, which is another name for Shavuot, feast of weeks. And then it also says Chag HaAsif, which is the feast of ingathering, which we also call Sukkot, the Chag HaSukkot. And so those are the three.
So these are the most important feasts. And which is the first one?
Pesach.
According to the Bible, it's Pesach. Mm-hmm. Even though the Jewish calendar today has Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim and Sukkot as the beginning of the Jewish New Year, that calendar comes from Babylon. But according to the Bible, it starts in the spring, and it starts with Pesach. So Pesach is first, and we see it here in Exodus 23, right? The first one is Feast of Unleavened Bread. Then the next one is Shavuot. How many days is Shavuot after Pesach?
50,
right? So, Pesach, Shavuot, and today, this week, Sukkot. According to Exodus 23 that we just read here, we have Feast of Unleavened Bread, but in verse 16, what are the names of Shavuot and Sukkot here in Exodus 23:16?
Feast of Harvest.
Okay.
Or the first fruits of your labors as well.
Yeah.
So how does that play out in the agricultural year? According to the Bible, like right now, if you were to walk down in Jerusalem and you go to the shuk, what is for sale at the shuk? This is the vegetable market. If you haven't been there.
Which
ones?
Dates,
grapes, pomegranates.
Mainly grapes, pomegranates.
Apples.
Apples. Grapes, pomegranates, olives. Now you're picking your olives. You've got to cure them before you can eat them and all that. But this is, if you walk around, you'll see a lot of Arab ladies hitting trees, getting the olives. And there's some other things. And what's going to happen after, agriculturally or weather-wise, what's going to happen now after Sukkot?
First rains.
It's going to be first rains. Yeah, and there's like first rains and there's second rains. And then what's your first crops that come up here in Israel? It's not going to be your fruit. It's not going to be your trees.
Wheat or something like that.
Yeah. So the first one's going to be barley. And then it's going to be wheat. So if you read the Bible, we don't have time to look at it now, but Pesach is connected to the barley harvest.
Right.
It's around that time. And Shavuot is connected to the wheat harvest. And all of these, you know, play out into Deuteronomy 8:8, where it talks about the seven species, people call it. When you come into this good land, you'll find wheat and barley and
biblical.
Right, but they're not. They're not. Yeah.
Nor are apples, in spite of apples and honey. For
being nice.
Well, there are apples. There are apples in the Bible, but yeah, they're not mentioned as.
Well, they're not.
They're not part of the big seven right now. Well, that's according to the Latin tradition. So, anyways, so all of this to say, according to Exodus 23, while we have all these kind of spiritual revelations or interpretations about what Sukkot means or what Pesach means, you know, blood of the lamb, and Shavuot is about the giving of the Torah. That's not in the Bible, but that's according to Jewish tradition. And Sukkot is about, you know, you wandered in the wilderness.
But we did get the Holy Spirit. That was a pretty powerful harvesting.
Right.
Thank you.
But originally, you've got this stuff based around an agricultural calendar, is what I'm trying to get at. It also plays a part in the ordering of the year. Just like the farmer's almanac in other cultures, that agriculture is key to life. I mean, that's why rain was so important back then. Today, we desalinate and we use technology, but it's still the environment and the creation back then was something to be feared, you know, if God had to be in control, you know, otherwise you die of famine and all these other things. So that's the agricultural part. So let's go to Sukkot. It's one of the big three, Passover, Shavuot, Sukkot. And what makes it special according to the Bible? What are its characteristics?
Well, to live in booths for 7 days.
Okay, so where is that?
Well, it starts in Leviticus 23.
Okay, so let's go to Leviticus 23. That's probably the most important one to look at. Leviticus 23:34. Tell the Israelites, on the 15th day of the 7th month is the festival of temporary shelters or booths, Chag HaSukkot, and it's for 7 days. On the first day is a holy assembly, and you must do no regular work. For 7 days, this is Leviticus 23, verse 36 now. For 7 days, you must present a gift to the Lord. On the 8th day, there is to be a holy assembly for you, and you must present a gift to the Lord. It is a solemn assembly day. You must not do any regular work. So Sukkot is going to have like two Shabbats, one at the beginning and one at the end. These are the appointed times. In Hebrew, the word's mo'ed, times of the Lord, that you must proclaim as holy assemblies. In the creation in Genesis 1, when it says God put the stars and the moon and the sun, it also says he gave the years and the days and the mo'ed, the appointed times or feast or however you want to call it. So that's in Genesis chapter 1. I think, what is that, the 3rd day of creation? So you just to do all of these offerings. Verse 38 also as well. Verse 39 of Leviticus 23. On the 15th day of the 7th month, when you gather in the produce of the land. So again, we got the agricultural aspect. You're collecting the produce of the land. So olives, grapes, pomegranates and other things that are coming to the end now. This is the end of the collecting of whatever's out there, because now it's going to get colder, the rain's going to come, and things will die, like what winter always does. It'll even snow here sometimes.
It's interesting, isn't it, that it's been turned in the West, it's been turned into sort of harvest festivals. And yet it's got completely detached from the concept of the Moed, the appointed times of the Lord. There's no real understanding in the Western Church about the Moed, the Moedim, and what these feasts are. But somehow things like the Harvest Festival and everybody running around with, I don't know, loaves of bread and lettuces or something, gets stuck into the church. Isn't that right?
I mean,
yeah, but it's not connected.
No, not connected
to Sukkot. It's not connected to an understanding of the Moedim.
There's little understanding, I would say, generally.
I read somewhere that somebody thinks that the American Thanksgiving, which
stems from this, could be.
Right, yeah. Because I'm assuming it comes from the English harvest. You have something, right? Like a traditional harvest festival in the fall.
The thankfulness for the season's produce and the gathering in.
Yeah.
And as you say, the preparation because winter's coming.
Yeah.
And corn is a big fall one that's in many places of the world, but actually the word corn in German is grain.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Grain time.
That's right.
Yeah.
In America, it's maize.
It also has the aspect of giving to those who are in need.
Yeah.
Which is
you pass oil, goodies onto the needy.
Zedekah. We have that aspect, that element of giving to those who don't have.
Yeah.
In the sense of food kitchens and.
Yeah, in Jewish tradition with Sukkot, it's also the same idea. You're supposed to be inviting people into your sukkah, who
and also all the food organizations, you know, Tête-à-Tête and all these
it's
other.
It's
people,
the big drive time.
They have a huge drive to get people. Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't put the two together.
So if you go to verse 40 of Leviticus 23, this is a very famous part of Sukkot that most people know about is the branches. The four species and the interpretation of what they are, but I'll just read the verse. On the first day, you must take for yourselves branches from majestic trees. Fruit of majestic trees.
Not just ordinary ones, majestic.
That's this, huh? This is.
I've got the fruit of trees, branches of palm trees.
Yeah.
Boughs of leafy trees and willows.
I haven't finished reading it yet.
Oh, sorry.
Palm branches of leafy trees and willows of the brook. Yeah. So Pri Etz Hadar is where the citron comes from.
Oh, really?
And then you've got your other branches where today you get your other three branches together. But again, the idea is that this is kind of a bouquet of agriculture, right? And so that's interesting. Let's keep going to verse 41 because we got to get to Kohelet. Let's just go to verse 42. You must live in Sukkot for 7 days. Every native citizen in Israel must live in these Sukkot. And okay, so let's start with this first question. What is a sukkah? A booth?
Temporary shelter. Out in the open.
Right. And what are some of the, you know, it's covered with branches. Why is it covered with branches? Is it? Because obviously this isn't written here in the Bible, right? This is all interpretation that's been added by tradition over the years. But why the branches? What have
so
you heard?
Sort of openness in the top,
you can see
the
stars.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you can see the stars. So it's not really a home or a building. It's
well, it sometimes looks like the stars. And sometimes, if you're going to live in it for 7 days and you're praying for rain, maybe it's also for a bit of protection.
Yeah, but it wouldn't stop the rain. Yeah,
it doesn't do badly.
And you're commanded to get out of there if it is raining, because otherwise you can't enjoy yourself. So that's because this is also known as a holiday of joy, Simchat Torah, and all this. So they've added all these little extra conditions to make sure you don't come out grumpy if it's raining. But again, these are all these interpretations. But what's the idea here? Verse 43. Why do you do this? So that your future generations may know that I made the Israelites live in Sukkot when I brought them out from the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So here's something else here. What are some other examples of, you know, the sukkah in the Bible, where it's used? And if you don't know Hebrew, then it might not be so obvious or easily understood. But for instance, Jonah, when he went outside of Nineveh, he built a sukkah waiting for the destruction of Nineveh. And
the castor oil plant was a sukkah.
No. It says he built a sukkah, and then that plant.
I never saw that.
Yeah. So if you look at, you know, Jonah 4, it says he built a sukkah, and then God commanded this kikayon, this plant, to grow up. Why was it to grow up?
To protect him.
To give him shade. So that sukkah didn't give him much shade, right? So that's this other idea that the sukkah is not something you really want to live in too long. It's, and especially in the middle of the summer, it's not going to it's not going to help you that much. And it's basically like we're all saying, it's opening you up to the elements where you realize that, you know what, this is a little tough, and this isn't maybe the most enjoyable thing to be in. But it keeps you focused. You know, you're not going to get weak or fat or, you know, lazy. It's going to make you more like, okay, we've got to, like someone in the army, right? Kind of that idea. Also, Sukkot were built by Jacob for his animals. In Genesis, when he was with Laban, there's a place that he named Sukkot. Do you remember that story?
Right.
It's I think it's in 31, Genesis 31, 32, somewhere in there. And so again, you know, you're sticking animals in a sukkah. It's good enough for an animal. But don't, you know, today the Sukkot are so fancy and so, you know, they can, you start to think of them as cool. But
it's a work of art.
Yeah, they become works of art today, but really they're, it's just kind of like you're just trying to survive. That's what you got. So let's see here. So here's what I want to point out here in Leviticus 23:43. Why does all future generations need to live for 7 days in Sukkot?
To remember.
Do you remember what?
Tough times.
The tough times.
Well, I pulled them out of the land of Egypt. Yeah, I mean, this is God's calling card. I am the God who brought you out of the land of Egypt.
It's interesting. In the Hebrew, it says that I made you dwell in these Sukkot. Like, God says, like, this is what I put you in. So it's not just kind of like I'm giving you a benefit or something. It's kind of like, here, you're going to dwell in these. Your translations, does it say...
Which verse are you on now?
43.
Generations might know that I had B'nai Israel to dwell in Sukkot. So it's pretty strong there. Yeah,
I made the Israelites live in them. Hoshavti et B'nai Israel. And so here's another thing with these three pilgrimage festivals. And these are the three in the time of Jesus. Again, Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot, that if you're a male living in the land of Israel at that time, you're supposed to come up to Jerusalem to celebrate. And so you remember Jesus, he came up quite a few times for things like, remember he was 12 years old, he came up for Passover with his family, and then later on in other places he comes up for Sukkot or and Passover, obviously, because that's when he comes to die. But these are the times that you're supposed to come to Jerusalem and make a pilgrimage. But
he actually goes up for Hanukkah too, which is weird.
Right. But look at this. So Sukkot is the festival connected to remembering, all three of these are related to Egypt. Sukkot is the one that you remember about being in the wilderness, basically. Passover is the one that what? You're being brought out of Egypt, right? The, I
God brings them out. What is Shavuot connected to, according to tradition?
Tradition, the giving of the law.
So Sinai. So this is like the leaving. This is going to the mountain, receiving the law, the Torah. And then this one is kind of a downer, because it's, you got to remember the tough times. It's there's nothing glorious about a sukkah, is my, I guess what I keep trying to say. And
so all three of them are connected to Egypt. So that's also something to keep in mind.
But we're not looking at the spiritual implications of any of them. We're not looking at the way Yeshua fulfills them.
Right.
But God does say that I was with you in the wilderness for 400 years. And I dwelt with you, Emmanuel. I mean, to me, it isn't such a low-key festival. To me, it's one of the great festivals.
No, of course it's a great festival.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, though, if you think about its origin, that it was not some...
Right.
It wasn't like the water stood up at the Red Sea, or it wasn't that the fire came down on Sinai. It was these humble little huts that you're to remember. And what would you gather from that? What would be a lesson that you would learn from this, from that time? If you were to go through all the spiritual fruits, or the, you know, these things that you gain things, what would be a characteristic of that time period?
Well, God at least protects you. I mean, at least he makes sure you've got a cover over your head.
He protects you, but what does it do to you? How does it change your heart?
Well, you have to rely on him.
You have to rely. And if you have to rely on dependence, and so what's a child to a parent? Dependence, precious.
Valuing.
Okay, I mean, so thankful.
Thankful, yeah.
Makes you more grateful.
You're doing a...
Humbling.
Humbling.
He's doing a segue into the Kohelet, I can feel it.
It breaks you, right? It because you might think, oh, I can handle this. This, you know, this is me. I'm the one doing this. And you have a sukkah. And it's not a temple or some mansion. It's, wow, this is it. This is me. This, you know, and throughout the wilderness, how did they survive? How did, according to the Bible, how did they survive?
God fed them.
Their shoes didn't wear out.
None of the Egyptian diseases came on them.
Yeah. So it was anything they did?
No.
God
did it for them.
God did it for them. So it's kind of that, Sukkot is that reminder that it's God. It's God. It's not me. It's not me. And I guess we could even look at it now. In Hebrew, it's called a sukkah. In Greek, because, you know, the Hebrew Bible is translated into the Septuagint for Jews that were living in the Greek-speaking world before Jesus, called the Septuagint. And they called the sukkah skenos. And this is the word for tent. It's not, because in Hebrew you have a word for tent, ohel. And the sukkah are different. Tent is more like what we think of a tent, you know, something with cloth. Sukkah is more of this agricultural hut, like you said, maybe with branches and very temporary. Not something you drag around per se. But skenos, let's turn to 2 Corinthians 5. 2 Corinthians 5. Somebody want to start reading there?
For we know that in the tent, which is our earthly home, is destroyed, that the tent is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling. If needed, by putting it on, we may not be found naked. For while we're still in this tent, we groan, we burden.
2 Corinthians 5.
That we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. He who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who has given us the Spirit, capital S Spirit, as a guarantee. So we are always of good courage. We know that while we are home in the body, we are away from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. Yes, we are of good courage, and we would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So whether we are home or away, we make it our aim to please Him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil.
Okay, good. So, at the beginning, what is Paul kind of telling us here? What are we...
Even our bodies,
and it, because our bodies are made of flesh and, you know, carbon and these elements that we've learned over, you know, thousands of years of science and research, and you know, the one thing like Paul points out here is this tent, this body we have is not the end. And, you know, in a sense, when you're born, you start to die here on earth because of the elements, because of the sun, you know. We've learned about skin cancer over the, you know, last 100 or 200 years and, you know, what we eat. And there are things that can damage this tent if we don't try to take care of it or what we put into it. And so Paul's pointing this out that, you know, this tent... And in a sense, you know, it feels to me like it's like a sukkah here that he's talking about specifically, that it is mortal and it is something that does not, it doesn't matter how rich you are, how famous, or how what you've accumulated on this earth, it from dust we came and to dust we go, right? We all know this. And so then his, you know, he's ending here with, so we are full of courage. We live by faith, not by sight. So I think that's another thing with the Sukkot festival, about when you're inside of this shifty dwelling and it's got holes in it and the wind can blow through it. You kind of have to have faith because it's not a strong castle. And you've got to trust that things are going to hang in there with it, and why do we have courage? Because we're trusting in the Lord, right? We're not trusting in ourselves. We're not trusting in our money or whatever it is that we think is keeping us secure. It's at the end of the day, it's the Lord. And so when we get cancer or when we get disease or we get, you know, like we lose sight in our eyes or hearing or whatever, each one of those steps are kind of that whole process of faith where, but my trust is not in my faculties and in what I bring. It's that I've been trusting in the Lord this whole time and I will continue to trust in the Lord. So now that we've kind of got that
on the introduction.
Why would Sukkot be connected to the scroll of Ecclesiastes, Kohelet? And there's been great debate. Some people say, oh, there was only five scrolls, and that was the last one, and they just gave it to Sukkot because they had no one else to give it to. Because some people are like, well, what's the point? Because... again, I mentioned Sukkot is the festival of happiness. It's the festival of joy. You're not supposed to have rain drip on you in your sukkah. You're supposed to enjoy yourself. You're supposed to have fun. It mentions it a few times in the biblical text. And
but actually now, I thought you were doing an actually magnificent segue into Kohelet. Because that's what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Gemma. but why? Like, you know, so why, how would Qohelet, this kind of bummer of all books in the Bible, this is not something that a lot of people read at, say, birthday parties or, you know, whatever. It's not a popular book in the church. Why is this here connected? It would seem like they're opposite ends of the spectrum. What do you think?
The end of the book reminds us to hold on and remember God before it's the end of us, before we pass.
Okay, so Ecclesiastes 12, verse 1, I think that's what you're referring to?
Yeah, actually Ecclesiastes 12, verse 6.
And also 1.
Remember in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come. Because days of trouble will come.
Right,
for
right.
Sure.
Yeah.
They will come.
Yeah.
It's hang on to what you've known in the light when you're in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's any connection in the Hebrew, because in one, generation comes and a generation goes, but the earth remains forever. And we're being told we're to live in this sukkah, to remember, to tell your generations.
Yeah.
Is there a word connection there? Dor
v'dor? Dor v'dor. Yeah. Let me just check here.
Passing on the faithfulness of God. Teaching
yeah, the God
children
God,
in the way it's...
God
it's
remains consistent
them,
no matter what the hassles are.
You will get all this in your life, but hang on to the truth that God is faithful.
In Leviticus 23:43, it says, and your generations will know. So it has the word dor there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in Ecclesiastes, which 12, is it verse 6? Is that what you're talking about?
Can you go downstairs?
Or maybe not. What was the other verse that you were pointing out besides verse 1? What's it say there?
Remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden rod is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground in Hesiron and the spirit returns to God. It's not a great translation I've got on my Kindle here.
Right, right. Yeah, so what happens is in the Hebrew, your English kind of translated it to make it flow better, is... The word or the phrase "remember your Creator" is the very first three words of verse 1. Uzchor et bo'echa, and then all the this is Ecclesiastes 12, verse 1, and then all of the subsequent verses kind of hang on that phrase. Before this happens, before that happens, before the silver cord, before that. So. Yeah.
I think this book also talks about your dependence on God completely, because only He can allow you to enjoy the fruit of your labor. Only He can bless you.
Yeah.
In chapter 3, it says, in verse 12, I know that there's nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live. But every man may eat and drink and find satisfaction in his toil. This is a gift of God. Mm-hmm. And there's other places where it says, you know, what an evil thing it is to toil and labor and then not be able to enjoy the fruit of it. It's actually a gift of God to be able to enjoy it. So you're actually totally relying on God for everything.
And it's important to stop and smell the roses.
Yes.
Because too often people are so focused on their work or their ministry or whatever they think they've been called to do in life. And the writer here, if you read through this book, this scroll, is saying that, you know, if you've got kids, you need to enjoy your kids. If you've got friends, you need to enjoy your friends. Because life, at the end of the day, I think is about relationships. And it's not about our stuff. And that's kind of Sukkot as well, right? You're supposed to invite people in and eat with them. That's the Sukkah, the focus is food. It's about meals. And it's supposed to, you're just be bringing people in and out and relating with them. So,
Ecclesiastes 2:25, for without him, God, who can eat or find enjoyment? He can't even get enjoyment.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Just nothing.
Because. Totally.
So it totally reinforces the message of the temporary booth, the temporary tent that's our body over and over.
Yeah.
All the way to the end.
Time is slipping away. Right now, it's slipping away. And we don't have to, like, be scared of it or be fearful, but we should see it as an opportunity to, okay, I'm going to seize that moment.
Enjoy
the moment. God's called me to do something, and I'm going to enjoy it while I'm doing it. Because so that's kind of like attitude, right? Mm-hmm. Your attitude. Like, it's one thing if you've got to go clean your room, but it's another thing if you have a good attitude while you clean your room. So... Or you can get some friends to help you clean your room. That's right. Whatever you can do to work it out. What else? What else do you see in Ecclesiastes?
I was struck this morning when I was reading it. Better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, since that's the end of mankind, and the living should take it to heart. And I don't know how you tie it up, but it's like even a house of mourning, which I'm assuming somebody has died, and it's like giving thanks for that person and who that person was, and the whole tradition of sort of eulogizing the dead.
That is chapter what?
That's seven, beginning seven, really.
Okay, chapter seven.
Yeah, 7:2 is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting. And I mean, in some ways, it's so true. You can go to a funeral, whether it's a Jewish funeral or a Christian funeral, whatever it is, and there's some sort of meaning to it.
Right.
Because you're giving thanks. But going to a house of feasting could just be basically partying.
In Sukkot, you see this here, Sukkot is the last festival. The winter is coming.
Right.
It's going to be dark. It's kind of like the end of someone's life.
It is.
You know, you've come down to... You're in this booth that's kind of,
yeah,
like it's not some magnificent,
right, it's
edifice.
Not, right.
It's this is the reality. We're skin and bones, and right. And Ecclesiastes is the one that says, you know, from dust we came, to dust we go, and so like the house of mourning is better than the house of feasting.
Yeah.
I think to understand that verse, you have to include it with the verse before, in verse one. What does it say there?
Better is a good reputation than precious oil, and the day of death than the day of birth. So the day of birth, you have no reputation. You're just a squalling brat. But by the end of your life, you hope you've got a reputation that somebody then can go and rejoice because he or she was X, Y, Z.
That's right. Because when you're born, your parents give you a name, but your name doesn't mean anything until you die. When you're dead, then people will say, oh, that name means this, 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 and this. And so it's like an accumulation of hopefully a legacy of blessing and honor and, you know, and not one that's, you know, you think of other people who have died and people kind of spit on their grave. So that's a very good observation.
Yeah, I don't put the two together. A friend of mine's just had, I think, a fifth or a sixth baby. It's irrelevant. And I wasn't at the brick because it was on a chag and I couldn't go. And I said last night, hey, what's the baby's name? And it's Shalem. Why is it Shalem? Because Shalem is a name for Jerusalem. And because this is the year when we celebrate Jerusalem being reunited. So this baby has to carry almost the future of Jerusalem in his soul. He's got a second name too, which is equally dramatic, but I can't remember.
So I want to end with this, because there's a lot we could read here with Kohelet and its connections to Sukkot. The what is the most prevalent word in Ecclesiastes or Kohelet that we hear all the time?
Better.
Vanity.
Vanity.
Oh, vanity.
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 Yeah.
Vanity.
That's right.
Vanity, vanity, says the preacher.
Vanity, vanity.
I think it appears 31 times in the book. And so what is this? What's its real meaning? Hevet. Hevet.
What vanity. Is vanity in Hebrew?
Hevel. Hevel, which
Hebel.
Is, yeah, he, bet, lamed. Hevel is like a vapor or a breath. So, you know, the Abel and Cain. Abel is Hevel. That's his Hebrew name, Hevel. And so he kind of lives up to that because his life is snuffed out early by his brother. And... but if you look at the other times that heaven is used in the Bible, like Psalms is a few times, it heaven is connected to the days of men. Our life is like heaven. It's passing, and it's like the flower of the field.
It's the grass that withers.
Yeah, we are the grass. Yeah, and the wind blows on us and we're gone. And I mean, there's just so many ways that we can die. You know, you hear stories all the time. You know, someone just walked out in front of a car, or they tripped and they hit their head. It doesn't have to be some grand assassination, or just happens, or your heart just stops, and there's no real kind of overt meaning for it. And that's one place that, so Hevel is connected to that, and that's Kohelet. I mean, that's Ecclesiastes, is this whole idea of vapor and breath of what we are.
What does the word Kohelet mean?
Preacher. Yeah. It's connected to Kahal, which, you know, Kehilah, the idea of assembly or gathering together, someone who speaks to the group. So everyone's passing, everyone's temporary, and very much the sukkah represents that, because those branches from my roof on my sukkah were going to shrivel up by next year. They'll be
next week.
Yeah. And the punchline is is forget the whole idea of, you know, we represent this, we come to the end of our life and we look back and we think, oh, what have I accomplished, or what did I not do? But we can kind of look at it also in a yearly cycle as well. The spring, we start off with this idea, when we're born, we've got so much energy. Our children run around crazy, and I don't know how to, you know, they're just too much. What?
You don't know how to harness them.
How to harness that energy. And it's just kind of going everywhere. And then as we get older, we start to harness it in our, you know, our jobs or our work or whatever it is we've been called to do. And then when as we get older, the energy is kind of draining, and also maybe even the passion. And so let's look at this, though, as not our lives, but just this year. You know, you look at it as kind of a cycle of a year. You've come to the end of the year if you're following this biblical calendar. And you realize, hey, you know what? I didn't quite do so great this year. But it's also a reminder. So it humbles us, but it's also a reminder that redemption is still to come. We haven't entered the land of Canaan yet, right? Because they've come out of Egypt with Pesach, they've gone to Sinai, where they've touched God with the Torah. And Sukkot is, we're in the wilderness. We are pilgrims in a strange land. That we are in process of going towards heaven, or whatever you want to call it, you know, this whole idea of growing. And so, you know what? We're not there yet. We haven't got to Canaan yet. We haven't made it to the other side. And so, in a sense, Sukkot is a holiday of potential. It's the potential of redemption. You know, it's not over yet. Even if we've failed all the way up to here, The children of Israel failed a lot, right? There's lots of stories about that in the wilderness. But they still made it. You know, maybe it wasn't their generation, but the next generation made it. Their kids made it. And it reminds me of, there's an avot in the Mishnah. There's a saying that from one of the rabbis. He says, just because you will not finish the task that you've been given doesn't mean that you can quit doing it.
That's nice.
And it's a humbling idea, but it's also that idea of faithfulness that, you know, even if I'm not going to get my instant gratification or my reward in this life, whatever, I can still build towards it for the next generation or the generation after that. And so, anyways, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Chag Sameach.
Well, it's like trying to know Jebulon.